We'll call his office, but let's start.
Yeah.
Keep moving. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Today is Wednesday, February 3rd, 2016, and I'm opening a meeting of the Joint Committee on Ways and Means Subcommittee on General Government. We're going to start as an informational session because we don't yet have a quorum. Mr. Borden, if you'd like to get us started.
Good afternoon, Madam Co-Chair and members of the subcommittee. Before you is the Department of Revenue and their property tax revenue shortfall request. As you may recall, during the 2015 session, they came forward with a request related to the county assistance assessment function funding account. I think I messed that up a little bit, but with a revenue shortfall in that account, as well as a shortfall in the cadastral account, and a special purpose appropriation of $1.8 million was set aside for this for the property tax division until further information is provided, and the agency is now here to provide that additional information.
Thank you. Who's going to come talk with us? And can I say, while you guys are settling in, I must have missed this word last year, but it is lovely to learn a new word like cadastral. I looked that up last night. Thank goodness for the definition function in an online Acrobat now, so I can look up words like cadastral. It's cool. All right, floor is yours.
Thank you. Please introduce yourself. Good afternoon, Chair Steiner Hayward, members of the subcommittee. I'm Chris Kautz. I'm the interim director of the Oregon Department of Revenue. Pleasure to be here with you today. And we are here, as John indicated, to talk about the property tax program rebalance. If you'll recall, we were here last session to present a request to you for general fund backfill in... I'm sorry.
I just fell in a hole.
One of those chairs doesn't go up.
Yeah, I just found it.
Let's move.
Thank you, Mr. Borden.
Okay, well, let's try to...
At least I brought a little humor to the witness's life. thank you. Now that I get to sit at the big kids' table.
Can you pause and we're going to switch to work session now that we have a quorum? And let's keep it as fast as we can because it sounds like we got a lot of people coming in and out. Okay. I'm going to close the informational session and I'm going to open a work session on the Department of Revenue Property Tax Division request. Keep going. Thank you.
Thank you very much. So we were here to ask for $1.8 million general fund last session to backfill for program expenditures in the valuation program. At that time, due to the fact that overall program expenditures in the valuation program, which are supported both by the general fund and the county assessment function funding assistance funds, were not sufficient to support the program. Today, our
Chris,
total request...
I'm sorry, can you hold on for 2 seconds? I need to clarify something. Can we stand at ease for 1 second, please, Julie? Because I don't want to... We're back. Okay, we're back. Go.
My apologies.
Sorry.
So our request today is for a total of $1,360,125 from the special purpose appropriation to fund both the valuation and cadastral programs. As I was talking about for the valuation program, there are two funding sources, the general fund and the CAFA funds, as they are known. CAFA funds come from both a $9 document recording fee as well as interest from delinquent property taxes. If you will recall, CAFA funds are split, 90% of them go back to the counties, and 10% remains with the Department of Revenue to administer the grant program, as well as to conduct appraisal work for industrial and utility properties. You'll recall this chart from the last time we were here that shows the red line is the valuation program expenditures, and the blue line is the CAFA receipts that we are able to retain for the state's work. And for 15-17, you can see the gap there was about $1.8 million when we presented this in 15. We are now further along in the biennium. That is why our request is lower than the 1.8 that we had before. It is and only reflects for the next 15 months going forward. We also are requesting funds to true up the cadastral program, which is...
Time out one more time. I'm sorry, we're gonna just change things to make sure we do this all legally. I'm going to close the work session temporarily. I'm going to reopen the informational session, and we're just going to keep going. We may put both of the work sessions at the end when I don't have a quorum issue, and that way we don't have to keep going back and forth. I apologize, Ms. Katz, for the interruptions. Keep going.
Not a problem. So in the cadastral program, it's a map maintenance service that we provide for 9 counties, and we are requesting a realignment of the resources to support this program. Counties pay us for the services we provide, but they do not pay us the full cost of those services, and therefore general fund has been used to continue support of those map maintenance services.
Senator Johnson.
I know this is old ground that's already been plowed, and I enter into this question with trepidation given that Mr. MacArthur is sitting in the back of the room. How did those 9 counties get selected, and why is it that they are getting services below cost supported by the general fund?
So, Chair Steiner Hayward, Senator Johnson, there were more counties previously. Any county that wanted the service from us could get the service from us. What counties have done over time is that some have maintained those services, hired staff, and done their own map maintenance. Some counties go with other counties to get that service. The state has provided it, and it has, at least to my knowledge, usually always been subsidized by the general fund. It at least for the last good 5 to 10 years, there has been a subsidy by the general fund. So the costs have been relatively low as county costs have increased over time and that kind of thing.
Follow up,
please.
So would it be safe to say at this juncture that any county could apply for this benefit from the Department of Revenue? It's not capped. It's the reason I'm asking is that there are so many counties that are so distressed right now, and I'm trying to tease out from you guys, how prepared are you if suddenly all 36 say, gee, we want you guys to do this? I think that's an unlikely occurrence, but I'm just curious what kind of preparation you've made in case you start getting more where you're selling below cost and making it up in volume.
I'm going to let the program manager answer.
Bram Ekstrand, Department of Revenue, Property Tax Section Manager. Madam Co-Chair, Senator Johnson, right now, if we doubled the number of counties that we're providing map maintenance support for, we could absorb that extra work. But if, as you mentioned, all 36 counties came to us looking to provide that service, we would have to restructure and do something different to address that need.
One last. This is slightly outside the scope of what we're being asked to consider and vote on, but are you finding efficiencies in this program? I recall way back when I first came into the legislature taking a tour over at Revenue of the whole map area and trying to figure out those counties that are keeping their own maps, what's the alignment, what's the duplication. Are you finding the greatest number of efficiencies to streamline providing this essential service?
Madam Co-Chair, Senator Johnson, yes, we are. We're able to provide them with the most up-to-date software, and so we're able to provide that technological advantage and the efficiencies that come with that. And many of the counties that contract with us are the smaller counties. Many of them are on the eastern side of the state where many of them don't even have a cartography department, and so they depend on us to provide those services. They don't have the volume of work that would support to have that kind of department, so it makes sense for them to come to us for those services.
One last question.
Sure.
Do any other agencies provide cartography services to any other units of government for any purpose that you're aware of?
Madam Chair, Senator Johnson, that would be a question for the Department of Administrative Services GIS program manager, Cy Smith. There's a lot of work for GIS shared services, and I believe they do extend to local governments, but I'm not familiar enough with that program to know.
Could I ask Mr. Borden to make that inquiry? I think that's what I was really getting at in my first run of questions, was to see whether or not we have cartography services embedded in multiple agencies where we could perhaps consolidate, find efficiencies, find greater accuracy, make a bigger investment in one centralized cartography than spread it out over multiple agencies.
It's, if I may. And Senator, that is correct. I know forestry for sure has their own cartography unit. I think, though, one of the responses from revenue may be that the uniqueness of these property tax issues that of the centralized nature around property taxes and boundary exchanges and stuff may be quite different from others. And so that's why this is in-house in particular in revenue. I know they do. They look closely at those boundary changes and issue memoranda back to the counties to certify those, I believe. And Brom can speak more specifically to those. But we're happy to follow up on your question, Senator.
I understand that, and I acknowledge it and agree with it, the specialized nature of your work. In thinking about Department of Forestry that right now is undergoing an exercise to find out whether or not they have a sustainable budget, I'm just looking for duplication. We have way too many agencies that are duplicating others. Both ODF&W and forestry, for example, count critters. Do we need two critter counting agencies, or can one do it? That's the point that I'm making. And for so long, it's just been business as usual. We just keep right on chugging along. And we've got agencies that are really in an existential crisis. And I'm just looking for duplication.
That's a great point, Senator. Thank you very much for bringing it back. Senator Whitsitt.
Thank you. Actually, I have several questions. But on page 6 of your request letter, you say that the property tax division will charge the county $60 per staff hour to perform the work. And that covers approximately 15% of the personal service cost that is required to perform it. So does that mean that they would normally charge $400 an hour, or is that just awkwardly written?
Can you say again where that is, Senator?
I know. Chair Steiner Hayward and Senator Whitsitt, I do believe I understand the core of your question, though. So... I would have to go back and take a look at how we got to the funding split for the cadastral program of 15% other funds and 85% general fund. My guess is it's the overall resources available through the other fund stream. But John, maybe you can help me.
If I may, Co-Chair.
Please.
Senator, I think that's not articulated very well in the letter. Essentially, for the cadastral program, my understanding, the agency can correct me, 85% would be a general fund obligation, and 15% would be from this contract revenue. So that particular $60 fee is what the agency charges for those 9 participating counties. So that's what they've calculated is their... Right. Their billing rate for those counties for those services. So that's the full rate, is my understanding.
I guess, John, what my question was is what would the rate have to be to fully account for the personal service costs?
Do you know the answer?
Appears to be $400 an hour.
Yes, I think, though, if I may, Madam Co-Chair, the $400 an hour is not accurate. That assumes that that's just 15% of the cost. So I think the agency has said they've looked at the $60 but not come up with the full market value or of what it would what they would charge the counties. So, again, it's a subsidized nature, but perhaps the agency has more...
I guess I'll rephrase the question. Maybe you could make available to the committee what hourly rate would be required to pay for the entire cost. On page 5 of your letter, you talk about a personal service cost increase of 5.6% in the 13-15 biennium and a 11% projected price increase for 17-19, but there is no... There is no figure. What is the what was your personal service increase? This percentage increase this biennium that you're experiencing right now.
From 13-15 to 15-17, I don't have that number off the top of my head, Senator.
I think, if I may, actually, what I think this sentence says is that if you look at the 15-17 biennium, they increased 5.6%.
You're correct.
From 13-15, you know, over that, again,
right.
Not perhaps the most elegant phrasing, and then are anticipated to increase again by up to 11% for the 1719 plenum. Am I accurate in that interpretation?
I believe you're accurate in your interpretation. It isn't written well, but I believe that is what our intent
was.
If
you could circle back with Mr.
Boyle, we will double back.
So you're saying that 5.6% is actually the projected increase for this biennium over 1315?
It's what we funded. Yes, it's what we funded in your legislatively approved budget, roughly speaking. In their LAB for 1517 biennium, if I'm understanding you correctly. Cannot tell you whether that's accurate or not, because I certainly don't remember that level of detail.
We'll double check it for you.
Mm-hmm. And then on page 3, if I may, there's a on your senior and disabled citizen property tax deferral. You're talking about a unit now has fully staffed as 5 FTE and 4 seasonal temporary work assignments, so I would just kind of figured that maybe at $1.3 million personal service of the biennium. That's just my guess, my estimate. How much does this program defer on an annual basis? I mean, what percentage of the total handle are you using up on in personal services?
Madam Chair, Senator, what's it? You're referring to the administrative operating costs of that unit? Is that?
Yes, you're saying that it's it takes 5 FTE and 4 seasonal and temporary employees. It's what caught my eye, it's a fairly small program, so it seems to be very labor intensive.
Actually, if I may, Senator, from our LFO analysis, we have estimated with the program's assistance that they make approximately $14 million in property tax payments each year and receive an estimated just under $20 million a year. So they have a substantial flow through this program with that staff. It's some of the staff, again, is seasonal in nature. But a substantial amount of money flows through this program. And there's, you know, it has had periods of liquidity recently, but recent reports from the agency is it's fully liquid. It has a balance of right around 24, 25 million or so. So it's with the statutory changes, it's been able to have repaid the loan that it received from the Common School Lands Fund, and on top of that has recovered.
Okay, thank you.
Any more questions before we move on? Okay, despite the fact that we now have quorum, I'm gonna stay in informational because I'm tired of making you pause, and we'll just keep going like this.
So to wrap up on slide 7, our request today is to backfill the general fund necessary to support the valuation and cadastral programs for the remaining 15 months of this biennium. We're requesting a total of $1,119,139 for the valuation program and $240,986 for the cadastral program out of the special purpose appropriation. In addition, we're requesting the restoration of 7.2 FTE that was reduced out of last session, for these programs as well. That is our request today.
Cool. Thank you. You've answered a lot of questions. Are there any more for this team before we're done with this section? Okay. Since I have quorum, I'm going to close the informational session. I'm going to reopen the work session. And Mr. Borden, LFO's recommendation, because my understanding is we're not asking CFO for recommendations for this.
LFO recommends the $1,360,125 general fund increase to the department's property tax division general fund appropriation and an increase of the 7.20 FTE be included in the budget reconciliation bill for this 2016 session, and also the $1.8 million special purpose appropriation in the emergency board would be disappropriated then.
Madam Chair, can I make a motion?
Yes, please.
To expedite, I move LFO's recommendation.
Perfect. Thank you very much. Representative Nathan Mooson moves LFO's recommendation. Is there any discussion? Senator Whitsitt.
Madam Chair, where will this appropriations show up in our budget bills?
My understanding, Senator, and correct me if I'm not answering the right question, is that we will move this out. It will go to capital construction, and all of these will end up at the end of session in a big omnibus bill, and it will be in that big omnibus budget bill where it will show up. So we will all spend many hours poring over it to make sure that we've got it all right. That's my understanding.
Which hours are we going to do that?
Darned if I know, sir.
Sounds like the mother of all Christmas trees.
Yeah, well, that's the problem, but I guess that's how we're doing it in short session now. Any other questions or comments? Is there any objection to the motion? If not, so moved.
Thank
and we
you.
We don't need carries because they go to capital, right?
Cool.
All right. I am closing the work session on the property tax division session. Is everybody likely to be able to stay here through the marijuana program? Sent Representative Hurd, you're not so sure?
Okay. If I get this text, I have to leave, but...
Cool. Then what I'm going to do is I'm going to do it the same way. I'm going to open an informational session on the Department of Revenue recreational marijuana request. Mr. Borden, you can get us started, and then we'll deal with the work session when we get there.
Madam Co-Chair and members of the subcommittee, as you may recall, in November, the department made a preliminary report to this subcommittee on what it thought was the estimated cost for the cash management portion of the recreational marijuana. During the regular session, they received an approved budget of around $1.9 million for the programmatic staff, and also changes to the core system project to include a point of sale functionality to that project. And at that time, during the 15th session, the cash management side was indeterminate. So this is their formal request for cash management resources.
Cool. Sir.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is John Galvin. I'm the Marijuana Tax Program Manager at the Department of Revenue. With me is Jolene Swint. Jolene is the Processing Center Section Manager who is responsible for the cash management function. This afternoon, we'd like to discuss and answer any questions regarding our budget request as it pertains to the marijuana tax implementation. As Mr. Borden said, during the 2015 session, we were not prepared to present estimates for setting up cash handling. We indicated we'd come back and present that information, which is what we are here to do today.
Which slides?
Nifty.
Cash handling. We believe that most of the businesses will not have access to conventional banking services because of federal restrictions. While we anticipate some of these businesses will find ways into the banking system, we know that others will be paying in cash. We've had a short 6 months to be prepared to safely and securely accept these large cash transactions, and our temporary solution is needed to bridge the gap until we're able to construct a permanent solution. The permanent solution will likely take 1 to 2 years to design and build. While we started taking payments this week in our temporary solution, the permanent solution will increase efficiency, improve safety and security for both taxpayers and staff, and improve the taxpayers' experience.
Senator Johnson.
Okay, you've been at this for a week, right?
2.5 days, Senator.
Silly me, 2.5 days. It just seems like a week. We're having so much fun.
Oh, it does.
Give us a little profile of what's been happening. People showing up with shopping bags full of hundreds? What's it look like?
Madam Co-Chair, Senator Johnson, the last couple days have been interesting. We have had about 5 scheduled appointments.
I'm sorry, Ms. McClendon, can you just introduce yourself?
Oh,
the record,
sorry.
Even though Mr. Galvin did.
I'm Jolene Swint from the Processing Center Section Manager. I'm responsible for the banking function within Department of Revenue.
Thank you very much. Keep going.
So it's been interesting. We've had 5 scheduled appointments because we have required scheduled appointments, and I believe out of those five, we've deposited about $80,000. And it's been kind of, yes, our first person came in with a Christmas bag. However,
seems appropriate.
Yes. However, his money was the way that we requested it. It was aligned, and we didn't have any problems processing it. So we haven't seen anything too strange. People have been really nice, and we have given them clear expectations on the phone how to bring in their money, that they may have a delay when we're counting it, and that they need to know how much they're depositing, and they all have been very pleasant to deal with up to this point.
Thank you. Well, I've taken money at public events, and we're given little pens to check counterfeit. Are you checking counterfeit?
Yes, we, Madam Co-Chair, Senator
Johnson. Let's just keep going.
Yes, we have pens, and we also have some high efficiency counting machines, and they check for counterfeit as well.
Cool.
Oh, that's cool. The counting machines check.
Yes.
Huh? Nifty, Senator.
And as long as I'm talking, I'll renew this request. Mr. Borden's already heard this before. I'm just going to renew it. The marijuana activities are spread out over so many agencies that it is very difficult for the legislature to get a clear handle on where it all is. At full Ways and Means during legislative days, I made the request that we try to get a handle on an income and expense report from all the agencies. I know LFO is working on it. This is not meant as a criticism. I just want to renew the request on the record that I think the legislature needs to have some idea of how much is out and how much is in. And given that you've collected $80,000 and I have been in committees and cast votes in full where we've spent millions on the expense side, I'm still trying to figure out what's a balance sheet look like. And I know you guys are working on it. This is not a criticism.
And we are, Senator.
And I may just add, and Senator Johnson, your point's well taken. I will say that I think the co-chairs made it eminently clear to us during the 2015 session that we would not see net revenue from this program for 8 months.
I know that. I just want to know how bad we're sucking mud.
I agree. I get that completely.
Badly, excuse me.
I love sitting next to somebody with excellent grammar. All right, keep going. We're good. Mr. Galvin.
The Department of Revenue is requesting limitation increase of $2,500,829 for the construction and development required for cash handling. Our request is broken into four categories: non-reusable temporary solution. That includes wiring, HVAC, bulletproof glass. Reusable temporary solution. Those are items including cameras, cash counting machines. Reoccurring cost, that's mainly personnel. And permanent solution estimate, this is simply an estimate of the cost of a permanent solution. Jolene and I will go into specifics for each category, starting with the temporary space, the one-time costs. Many of these one-time costs are associated with labor, specifically vendor labor. Several of the installation costs will need to be duplicated for the permanent solution. Some of the supplies cannot be transferred. For example, the HVAC upgrades cannot be transferred, and the bulletproof payment window glass in the temporary solution was custom built to fit into an existing wall opening, so that can also not be transferred. The temporary space reusable, these items can all be moved. So the cash counters, they're, as Jolene said, they're very sophisticated and they're able to sort cash as well as identify counterfeit bills. The extra monitor was a recommendation by the Oregon State Police so that taxpayers could see themselves on camera and immediately identify themselves as being recorded. The operational supplies are one-time things like coin trays, calculator stands, floor mats, and 10-key machines. Jolene will now cover reoccurring costs with you.
Please tell me people are not showing up with baggies full of coins. Just cash, like green folding money, right? Just as an aside, you said coin counting machines, and I have this bad vision of.
Well, they certainly could.
Okay.
But we're not encouraging them to do that.
That's good.
Yeah. So I would just like to recap the staffing needs and the request for what we're calling the cash transaction unit. I came and spoke to you in November, and the request from that discussion really hasn't been modified. We have worked diligently on creating a unit with what information and resources and limited knowledge of what might happen in result of the implementation of this program. We've partnered with Colorado, with Washington, with our treasurer's office, with our financial institution, internal audit, the program, Department of Justice, local county, and state police. And we have two managers that have over 20 years of experience that have been helping put together this unit. We are asking for continued support of the 10 positions. The bulk of the positions will be the accounting tech twos. And I will describe to you kind of what they will do so you'll understand why we're asking for so many. But we will have two windows, and each window will have two people stationed at those windows. One person interacts with the client, counts the cash, receipts it, enters it into the system, and secures it in a bag. The second person validates that process, makes sure it's handled correctly, and that the amount in the bag that is placed is accurate. That's a total of four people.
Can I just ask you a question about that? We met and talked about this last fall, and I remember that, and I've been thinking about this a fair amount and looking at your report. Obviously, when you're handling that much cash, it's important to be very careful so that there's a lot of trust and there's a lot of accountability. Get that. If I walk into my bank for some reason with $10,000 in cash, they're going to have to report it to the IRS, which is fine, but or to whoever else do they report it to. But I would not expect them to have two people at that window.
No.
So can you talk a little bit about why this is a difference? And if you had had somebody walk in to pay regular taxes, income taxes, property taxes, whatever, with cash, would you have that much cash? Would you have had them do it? Would you have had two people at the window?
Madam Co-Chair, there are situations where we would, or we would count it twice.
Okay.
We have the sophisticated counting machines. Mm-hmm. However, the amount that is going through there and the recommendations that we have gotten from our partners that we are working with, we should always have one person counting it and one person ensuring that nothing is happening with that cash. We also have cameras that are focused in on that cash and that handling of it. Mm-hmm. But we really feel that that is the safest for not only our employees, mm-hmm. but our taxpayers who are bringing in the cash. So is it different than a bank? Yes, but our understanding from the bank as well is it is counted twice, sometimes three times, and validated.
Okay. Thank you. I just wanted to clarify.
Sure.
Senator Woodson?
Along that same line of questioning, I'm sure that the banks count the money more than once, but they certainly don't have two people there to do it. It's sort of like running a business. You have somebody that does a transactional thing all day long, and if you have good management, you have somebody else checking the day sheet to add it up. But that person checking the day sheet, if they were in play to do it all day, could follow the transactions of all the different tellers. So I'm not sure. I think this might be a little more like a casino than a bank. But I would have to see that. That troubles me also.
Well, we want to be thoughtful and careful and observe within a broad range of reason best practices. We're just trying to understand this because it's new to all of us. So,
I will continue, and then
please.
Hopefully that will help
Thanks.
Answer some of that. So then we have two people who reconcile and prep those deposits for the bank. These two go through a very similar process. One counts and one validates, and so that would equal six. They go back to the room where the safe is at, and they validate that all that money that was in that bag is ready and prepped to go to the financial institution. These positions have to stay separate. There are teams of A and B, and to keep dual controls and security, they cannot be crossed throughout the day. The remaining two positions will be handling phone calls, answering questions, and scheduling appointments. They will also be used if any of the other six are out for sick leave, vacation leave, lunch, or break coverages. So that's really the extent of the accounting techs, what they do. We have, over the last few days, we have felt very comfortable with that process and the cash coming in and being handled and validated by the second person.
Just to clarify, I did read your report last night, but I don't remember seeing that level of detail in the report about who's doing what. Have you provided that to us in any other way than just you're telling it to us, and I've missed it?
Madam Co-Chair, I'm not sure that we have provided that level of detail on exactly how the transaction will be, but we can. It is a process
I mean, I think you could do it as a diagram or something, Ms. Sure. Lint, but I think it would be very helpful to the committee to have a clearer understanding and be able to, you explained it as clearly as you could with words, but a lot of us are visual learners,
Absolutely.
So it would be helpful. If you could provide it to Mr. Borden, that'd be great.
Absolutely, I can do
Thank
that.
Thank you.
Yep. So then the other position we have in there is an operation and policy analyst. It is necessary to assist with policy and process changes, reporting, training, and also being the conduit between programs and the system. Our banking system is not a simple system, and it requires someone with knowledge to assist in it. The other position that we are asking for is a manager. My belief is this unit cannot be managed without a manager on location. The scheduling alone is time-consuming and complex. The 9 staff will be reporting to them and will have oversight of operations, scheduling, dual controls, dealing with issues, conflict, and continuous monitoring of safety and cash handling practices and coordination of the state police. This manager will also be needed to be part of the teams for dual controls if there's a staffing issue. Do you have any questions about that?
Questions? So, more questions yet?
So the next slide talks about the recurring cost. We talk about cash contamination fee. We added that in because there is a cost from our financial institution. If we have money that is contaminated, they charge us.
Madam Chair. She said yes.
Okay.
Could you please explain that a little bit better? Is this something that you have negotiated? Is this subjective? We all use banks. We all have money that we don't know where it came from. Who decides that it's contaminated, and how come 35,000?
So, Madam Co-Chair, Senator Johnson, our banking contract is through our Treasurer's Department. And this is something that we learned in conversations with them. I do not believe it is something that is negotiated, but that is something that we could find out with our Treasurer's Department. And this was an estimated cost that until this money starts coming in, we are unclear what it will cost us or even if the money will be contaminated.
I'm just going to sort of state this for the record. I have an issue. We have a contract with a bank, and I don't know how often that contract is refreshed. I don't know how many ups and extras are in that contract. It's not my job to second-guess the treasurer of the state of Oregon. But before we spend $35,000 of the taxpayers' money on contaminated cash, I'd like to know what the sideboards are on that definition. They just arbitrarily walk in and say, we found a $10 bill with cocaine on it. You owe us $35,000. I'd like some detail on that.
Madam Co-Chair, Senator Johnson, I do not have that detail. That is something that I believe would have to come from the Treasurer's Office.
It won't stop me from supporting the motion today going forward, but I think that's a considerable vagary, and I just don't know how aggressive we are given the purchasing power of the state of Oregon with our banking institution.
Perhaps, Mr. Borden, given that this committee works with Treasury as well, you could solicit that information from them and help us get a little bit more detail about how that's going to be managed, if you'd be so kind.
Yes, and Madam Co-Chair, and I believe the last I heard from the agency was this is just really a contingency. That I'm not sure if it's to their level of administrative rules, but their accepting of cash, if there's any question about it being contaminated at the point of receipt, it would be rejected. And they can, correct me if I'm wrong, rejected so that this fee would be avoided. But again, this fee is a contingency upon their part that they don't feel that would be exercised. Again, they can speak specifically to that.
Okay. Well, just for the record, I'd like more detail. I don't like how vague this is.
So other costs on here is a security presence, the armored car service, our cash county maintenance, operating expenses, and program travel for education in the future.
Madam Chair, program travel like what? You want to fly to Colorado and see how they do it, or what's that about?
Pretty much.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Madam Co-Chair, Senator Johnson, yes, not to Colorado specifically, but there are tax conferences where we could learn additional what other states are doing to be more efficient in the future.
Okay.
Senator, what's it?
Thank you. Is it possible to contaminate cash with marijuana?
Madam Co-Chair, Senator Whitsitt, I can't answer that question.
I'm sorry, Senator, I didn't hear your question.
I said, is it possible to contaminate cash with marijuana?
Good question.
We may have to call somebody who was in college in the 60s to find out.
I can answer that question. No.
A volunteer. No, I mean, that 35 could be 350 if that were the case.
Yeah. I don't know what that is.
I seem to remember, and I'm trying to scroll back very quickly through your report that you submitted. I seem to remember you saying in here that Colorado had not actually had a particular problem with contaminated cash, and that this was a likely overestimate, but you were erring on the side of caution so you didn't come back to us and say, oops, we told you 10 and it's 35 or 40. But that, am I right in remembering that from this report? It's
right.
A 10-page report, and I don't have a search function on here right now.
You are correct.
So, okay. So I'm guessing then, Senator, that cash contamination with marijuana is not much of an issue, because if Colorado's not running into it, then we're probably not going to either. No guarantees, of course, but... Okay. Other questions before we move on? Cool. Keep going.
The permanent solution will handle all of the tax payments for the Department of Revenue, not only the marijuana tax cash. This conceptual construction estimate is very preliminary. A design will require hiring an architect. And design estimate, rather. And we have been hesitant to do so without funding. So the soft construction on the slide includes architecture, engineering, permitting, oversight. They're the soft cost. The hard costs include the physical walls, any demolition, ceilings, HVAC. The equipment costs, additional cash counting machine, furniture, camera work. And the overhead contingency is to account for any overages that may happen during construction projects. We would be happy to answer any further questions.
Madam Chair.
Senator.
I'm not so good in math. What is your percentage of the contingency of the total?
It's 37%. Madam Chair, Senator Johnson, okay. 37%.
Oh, good, Mr. Gallon.
Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions about this section? Okay. We good? This is it. Yes?
Yes. We'd be happy to answer any further questions.
Okay. Mr. Borden, I think the floor is yours. Yeah, I would. Let me grab Representative Nathanson. We're still in information session, but I want him to hear the recommendation. Okay. I'm going to then take us out of informational session and open a work session on the Department of Revenue recreational marijuana request. Mr. Borden, LFO's recommendations.
Madam Co-Chair and members of the subcommittee, LFO's recommendation differs from the request of the agency. LFO, at this time, the volume of cash going through the system, the significant investment in the cash processing ability of the agency's existing infrastructure for non-marijuana tax cash processing, and also its just ability to rely upon seasonal and other vacancies to fill any void that may occur, LFO is not recommending all of the cash processing positions. We, of the eight recommended for the cash processing unit, we're recommending four at this time, and we feel that there's sufficient, that would be sufficient to provide dual controls and also is in general alignment with the most recent current law revenue forecast for marijuana tax proceeds to be processed. Also, you know, the processing of those funds are by scheduled appointment, and the agency has the ability to control those. So what we're recommending is a highly integrated solution with their existing cash management function and also their checking and receiving function that exists within the agency with this marijuana program to get economies of scale. The operations and policy analyst position, we're not recommending at this time. One was several were approved during the 15 session, and this one, its job duties are unclear to us. the management position that's being requested, it's a principal exec manager B. So the second level we're recommending be approved to get the program up and going, but as limited duration so that it can be reevaluated. So again, we're just trying to keep an eye on overall costs. There's no intent to impair their ability to process cash. And so if additional resources are needed, obviously the agency can have some, like any other agency, have some temporary ability to accommodate that until they can come back to the emergency board or the 17th session. So with that, the Legislative Fiscal Office, oh, there's one more recommendation too that I'd like to make sure we're clear about. During the 15th session, an economist position was approved for 0.25 FTE. That has yet to be filled and would come in late in the biennium. And we're recommending for now that that just be turned to limited duration rather than permanent full-time, because we're not quite seeing the need for a full-time economist at this point. Again, these decisions can be reevaluated next biennium. So the Legislative Fiscal Office recommends a $2,052,807 increase to the Department of Revenue's other funds limitation, and the increase of 4 permanent full-time positions, 0.29 FTE, and 1 limited duration position, 0.75 FTE, be included in the budget reconciliation bill during the 16th session. In addition, the Economist 3 position, approved as part of House Bill 5047, is moved to limited duration.
So before we take a motion, because we're moving so fast, I haven't had a chance to talk to the agency about the discrepancy between LFO's recommendation and your request. And I'd like to hear from you your response to the concerns Mr. Borden outlined before I entertain a motion, if that's okay. Or would you rather make a motion and then hear about it?
I'd like to make the motion and finish the conversation with the other LFO analyst in the hall and okay. Come right back in. It'll just take 1 minute. Or I could just come back and make the motion. I just need a minute to finish this.
Why don't you make a motion and then we'll just have this as part of the discussion.
Okay.
And then we can always have you do something different.
Sure. Madam Chair, mm-hmm. At this time, I am moving the LFO recommendation.
Thank you. Representative Nathanson moves the LFO recommendation. And under discussion, I'd like you to now respond, if you'd be so kind.
Madam Co-Chair, I have some real concerns on what will happen if we don't fulfill all 10 of the positions. Some of the things that just come to my mind is, right, as of today, we only have 17 scheduled appointments, but there is about 300 retailers that should be scheduling to pay. And so we will have limited time and opportunity to make back-to-back appointments, not to mention those folks who desire to come in and without an appointment to pay, we would like to have some accommodation there. Our dual controls will be in jeopardy. The intake and reconciliation will not have separation of duties, more than likely. Safety and security will also be in jeopardy because of those dual controls. Keeping the cash in dual controls and multiple eyes on it is what I believe will help us keep the money secure, our employees safe and feeling secure about it, and our clients' continued confidence in our processes. I feel like the agency is going to have to, once we leave here, go back and have a discussion on what kind of risks they're willing to take for this cash transaction unit to move forward to support it.
Thank you. Mr. Galvin, anything you want to add?
No, thank you.
Thank you. Committee, I'd appreciate your thoughts at this point. Senator Whitsitt.
A question. Are these marijuana, I'm trying to formulate what to call them, the people who sell marijuana, are they supposed to be making a monthly deposit or a quarterly deposit? And why are we doing monthly instead of quarterly? How many of them are there, and how many, I mean, have you looked at how many deposits you will be accepting in a year?
Madam Chair, Senator Whitsitt, we're requiring monthly payments for this Fast Start program for every dispensary, and there's approximately 300 dispensaries. So we should be getting around 300 appointments per month.
Why? Why are we doing it monthly instead of quarterly? You said what the rule was. You didn't give the rationale. Why?
Madam Chair, Senator Johnson, the rationale behind monthly deposits was there's a lot of unknowns with marijuana. We had initially talked about doing something similar that we do with our withholding and payroll tax program, which is base your deposits depending on your federal schedule. We don't know what this looks like. We don't know if it's some dispensaries or could be selling $1 million a day. Until we had more information for the quick start, we set the rule at monthly deposits.
So if I could just follow up on that really quickly, two parts to it. Is that what Colorado and Washington are doing also, monthly deposits?
Madam Co-Chair, that's what I was going to add. I visited Colorado, and Colorado does monthly, and I believe Washington does monthly as well. I would have to double check on Washington, but I believe they do.
Okay, and if I had to guesstimate, part of the reason is the uncertainty, but I would also be concerned about accumulation of that much cash in a place of business from a public safety perspective. That's an awful lot of cash potentially to accumulate, right?
Correct, Madam Co-Chair. This was quite a discussion we had on whether we did it monthly or quarterly, and we felt for many reasons, not just that, was to start out and be able to have some self-monitoring, self-control of what came in, mm-hmm. and if that needed to be adjusted in the future, then we recommended that adjustment in the future.
So that Colorado does monthly and because of the cash.
So if I do my math right, then you would have a maximum of 300 deposits a month under current conditions. And if you had, that's 12 deposits per day. If you have two cash windows, that would be 6 per cash window per 7.5 hour day. Doesn't sound like they're going to be very busy, does it?
Madam Co-Chair, Senator Whitsitt, depending on the amount of cash that comes in or they bring in, the appointment could take anywhere from 30 minutes to 2 hours to count their cash. So what we have done is we have estimated 30-minute appointments to kind of fit, to schedule and fit them all in. However, knowing that not everybody is going to make an appointment and that we will have walk-ins, so we want to have time there to get them in. And the other part of this is, in this unit, we will not only be accepting marijuana cash, we will be accepting other forms of cash payment. So to start out, we felt 30-minute, we would schedule 30-minute time slots and then adjust as necessary.
How do you accept cash payments now, and how often does that happen?
Madam Co-Chair, Senator Whitsitt.
Non-marijuana.
On marijuana?
Non-marijuana.
Non-marijuana. Right now we have a tax services unit, and we also accept cash payments in our field offices. How often does it come in? There's cash payments that come in daily, but the volume of them is not the volume of what is estimated for the marijuana tax.
So do you now plan on making all cash deposits on a from all different sources, and they're going to come through this one with these two windows, and they're going to be all done on an appointment basis?
Madam Co-Chair, Senator Whitsitt, our long-term plan is we will have the cash transaction unit that will be on the first floor, and our cash payments will be sent there. We will not prevent people from making it in the tax services unit, but we'd like to offer an option that people can just come in and make their payment in the cash transaction unit. Will we require them to make an appointment? No. In the long-term plan, we will have more than two windows. I believe the long-term plan has four windows to be built in. So there will be designated windows for marijuana payments and windows for other payments.
Senator Johnson and then Representative Koch have been very patient.
I'm a little annoyed by the idea that you're requiring people to make appointments, but somebody just shows up and you're going to accommodate them. Either you have an appointment or you don't have an appointment, and I don't know why we should spend additional money because some people won't go through the protocol of making an appointment.
Madam Chair, Senator Johnson, I would say we are going to be annoyed too if they do that, and we are doing our best when they call in to get registered and to make an appointment to tell them they have to make an appointment. But we also want to be flexible enough if somebody shows up from Eastern Oregon and makes a 3 or 4 hour trip and we say, sorry, you didn't make an appointment, please call us over and make it, that we will be able to accommodate them and educate them at the same time to say, next month you will not be able to just show up. But in the beginning, we think this could be a hard concept for people, because typically when people want to come in and pay Department of Revenue, we're available and we take whatever form of payment you have. So we're doing our best to educate them up front on the phone and schedule the appointments. I would love to tell them no, but I'm not sure that's the stance that our agency wants to take out of the chute.
It shouldn't be that hard to send out an email to all of the registered folks saying, don't come if you're not registered. They're bright enough to run a retail operation. They ought to be bright enough not to come if they don't have an appointment. I mean, I got to be honest with you. I'm leaning towards the LFO recommendation right now. My biggest qualm is that hiring very expert positions like an economist on a limited duration, you might not get the best pool of applicants. But you and I had a long conversation about employee safety and about a variety of different things that are touched on in your request. I'm just not sure you need to go to zero, from 0 to 60 in the first bounce. You'll always have the option for the e-board if it turns out that there's overwhelming demand at your window. And so I just want to tell you, as much as I agreed with the things that we talked about when you met me out of this setting, I'm leaning in the direction of the LFO recommendation.
Thank you, Senator.
This question may be for Mr. Borden, and I'm a little confused about the fact that in our legislation, did it say that all these? Well, I understand the having cash, but if I was running a business, I mean, are we demanding that they bring in cash? And if I was in a business, I would be banking my money every day.
They can't.
Mr. Borden, you should feel free, but the issue is that the federal government says that even in a state, well, there's been guidance from the previous Attorney General Holder, that banks that are operating in a state that has legalized recreational marijuana will, if they believe in good faith that the marijuana proceeds are from a legal operation, will probably not be prosecuted under federal drug laundering statute. But as you can imagine, if you were a bank, it probably doesn't make you sleep very well at night. And some of our credit unions in the state are agreeing to set up accounts for marijuana growers and retailers, but not all of them, and not ones operating all over the state, which is why we have this unusual problem that Colorado and Washington have been facing as well. Have I summarized that accurately, folks?
Yes.
I think, if I may, Madam Co-Chair, please. So what the agency calls it is the cash fraction, and that cash fraction has been growing over time. Initially it was 40%. Now they think 80 to 85% of these payments will be in cash. The others will be through check or electronic deposits, but those are in accounts in banking institutions that cannot be differentiated as being marijuana related. So that's how that other 20% is being paid, and that other 20% is flowing through the agency's normal processing center function.
Thank you. That answers my missing piece.
Thank you. Ms. Swint, one of the things Mr. Borden alluded to in the LFO report is the ability to fill some of the positions that he's not recommending we fill, i.e. the additional positions from vacancies in your previously approved positions. Can you talk about that issue a little bit?
Madam Co-Chair, members of the committee, yes. I do not feel confident or good about, and I believe I talked about this in November, about forcing people to go into this unit or being involved with the marijuana tax. There are a lot of people that have very strong feelings about the belief of it, right? It's not like our other tax programs. The other thing is we have a bandwidth issue. The unit that we would take these people from to put in this cash transaction unit are from our electronic funds unit, our banking unit, and our miscellaneous cash unit, who are going into tax season. And we also are in the midst of core system replacement and processing cycle, life cycle work. There is a definite bandwidth issue and a I don't know if you would like to call it this, a backlog in work. So we move those people, we move them to this program, and it creates a deficiency in another area.
I appreciate that response, Ms. Flynn, but just to clarify, I understand your point about moving people, although I would argue pretty strongly that this is essentially the equivalent to pretty much any other law in the state. I don't really care how somebody feels. If they're working for the state, then they should be working for any legal function in the state. And I'm not totally convinced I buy the argument that I don't think we should have legalized marijuana as a reason for someone to say, I'm not comfortable working there, right? I mean, I'm just going to be very blunt about that. They chose to work for the Department of Revenue. You guys are collecting a legal tax mm-hmm. on a legal product, and they chose a job, right? And so I'm not super comfortable with that argument. But to clarify, I wasn't asking about transferring people who are already existing employees. I was saying you have vacancies, you know, previously approved positions, some of which are permanent, some of which are temporary or seasonal. When you hire new people, could you be using some of those positions to hire new people for this particular purpose? Or do you feel very, very strongly that every single vacancy you have has to go toward its originally planned purpose for all the reasons that you've stated? I'm being kind of firm, but I just want to get some clarity here.
Madam Co-Chair, I understand. I don't disagree with you about people's feelings about what program they work with, or when you work for the Department of Revenue, you kind of sign on for it, correct? I don't disagree with that. But that is a stance that we decided we would not open it up that way. We would open it up for people to be interested, open, competitive, and we felt in for the long term that would be good for the program and good for the agency. As far as my current vacancies that I have, there has been multiple reasons, but most recently why they are vacant and why they are sitting there. Could they be used for this? Probably. But what they were planned to be used for before this marijuana gift got given to us was to help bridge the gap from the core system replacement and possible increases in either personnel or changes in job duties. So could we take those and use them for this? We probably could. I can't tell you what current vacancies I know that are out there, but I'm not sure they would fall in this accounting tech 2 classification.
Okay. I mean, this gift, as you put it, was not a surprise. We passed this in 2014, and I would assume that you guys took that into some level of consideration. I mean, we had conversations about it during your budget hearings in 2015, so not a huge surprise, I would think. Okay. Senator.
I just have an unrelated question, but I forgot to ask earlier. Mr. Borden brought up in his analysis concern that you may be having difficulty finding an armored car contract. Have you been able to get an armored car contract?
Madam Co-Chair, Senator Whitsitt, the armored car services currently go through Department of Administrative Services, and as of today, we are still using the armored car that we have been. We are in conversation with Department of Administrative Services internally and the Treasurer's Office, because we know in other states they have changed armored cars throughout their implementation of marijuana. So we are trying to be ready for if that is to happen to us. But it is a Department of Administrative Services contract, not Department of Revenues.
Well, I'm sorry.
I'm confused.
I don't understand
the
service, at all.
The armored car service would be whoever pays for it is something that you obviously need to have.
Correct.
So is there an issue with the armored car contract? Does the current contract holder agree to carry marijuana-derived money?
Madam Co-Chair, Senator Whitsitt, I cannot answer you that question. The services that we have today through Department of Administrative Services, we have had armored car come and pick up the cash related to this. I think that is a question for them.
I gotta go. Okay, go.
Are you okay?
Well, Okay. You
got
to go.
I
okay.
got them stacked up in my office.
Okay, that's fine. If you're good? Okay. So when we met mm-hmm. last fall to talk about this in some detail, you told me at that time that, in fact, your current armored car contract was with a company that was going to refuse to take it, that you were going to have to contract with a separate one, and that the contract with the primary one was up in June, and that the plan was to regroup at that point so that you had one contract with a carrier who would manage all of this. Has that changed?
Madam Co-Chair, the discussions from the point that we met in November to today have changed, yes.
Okay, well, that's what we're trying to figure out, trying to understand. So at this point, you do have an armored car carrier who's willing to carry these proceeds.
At this point, we have the current armored car carrier, which is Loomis.
Yeah.
And Department of Revenue has reached out to Brinks to find out if they would be interested in the future to carry these funds.
Okay, but that's not answering my question. You have collected $80,000 in cash in the past 2.5 days. Now, in the grand scheme of things, that's not a lot of money, but I wouldn't like to keep $80,000 lying around my house, even in a hardened environment. And presumably, you want to get that money to the bank sometime between now and June. And it's going to keep coming in. So what I need to know is, do you have an armored car contract right now that includes transporting that money to the bank?
Madam Co-Chair, we have been advised from Department of Administrative Services and Department of Justice that yes, we do.
Thank you. That's what we needed to know. Okay.
Sorry for not getting your question clear.
Thank you. Okay. Other questions? Where are people now? LFO recommendation or something different?
LFO?
The motion, I don't understand that, but we're still under discussion of that motion, and I just want to understand.
I'm still supporting the
okay. I just wanted to make sure that we had an opportunity for DOR to respond. Okay. The motion is to accept the LFO recommendation. Is there any further discussion? Is there any opposition to the motion? If not, so moved. Closing the work session. And you guys are obviously welcome to come back. Even during session, we can schedule some other conversation if need be. So thank you very much. Any further business before the committee? We're adjourned. Thank you.
Which one?
Thank you.
Which one?